Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-TV.
Eine neue Folge, Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute, 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Der Big and Sports Podcast. Wissenswertes aus der Welt des Sports. Mit Patrick Hoch und Laura Luft auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Hello, this is the Big in Sports Podcast. Today, first of all, we are in English. Second of all, today we're going to talk about tennis together with Chris Spencer. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Patrick. Hi.
So first of all, let's start out with the usual three questions. Where the first one is, what is the greatest athlete you think is the greatest ever?
The GOAT for me has to be, I mean, I like so many, but for me it has to be Roger Federer. Yeah, it has to be, for me it has to be. I mean, I love Nadal, I love Kyrgios, I love so many of them, but for me it has to be Roger, number one for me.
I mean, you said the GOAT, I was thinking of Tom Brady immediately, but okay, Roger is the other GOAT, the GOATer GOAT, I think.
Yeah, I was going for tennis now, but Tom Brady is also, I watch American football a lot, and I watch basketball, and I watch a lot of sports, but keeping with tennis, for me personally, I would say Roger.
Yeah, he is, and he seems to be the... Yeah, the nicest guy as well.
I think so. I think the nicest, and also a great sportsman, great ambassador for the sport. And I think what he's done, I mean, it's all. I mean, I was watching some stuff today, and Rafa has won Monte Carlo 13 times.
Okay.
I think the French. And so it's like unbelievable. And he is also... My impression of him, I've never met him, but my impression, what I've seen is he's also a really, really great athlete, of course. But yeah, for me, Roger is number one.
Yeah, and he seems a well-rounded person all over. So I can live with that, basically.
Okay.
So the second question is, which is the biggest sports event you ever witnessed? So it does count if you saw it on television, and yeah, it doesn't count. It does count if you were there even. So which one is the biggest sports event you ever witnessed?
Okay, so the one I was at personally?
Yeah, you can take whichever you want.
Okay, I was with a player of mine at the qualies qualification for Wimbledon.
Okay.
And for French Open, and that for me was an amazing thing because it was just the atmosphere, the whole thing, and I met Tommy Haas, who I used to know about when he was 15 or 16. In fact, I've got a picture of me and him when I used to work for the Tennis Academy in America, Nick Bollettieri, and I used to be on court with him when he was 15, and I met him in Roland Garros when he was playing the qualies because he lost his ranking through injury. And that was a great moment. Being in the qualies of Wimbledon and being around, there was Federer, there was Andy Murray, and I stood there in line, and Andy Murray was standing in front with his coach, Ivan Lendl, a big, big hero of mine growing up in the 80s, and stood behind him in the lunch line, and Ivan Lendl, his coach, paid for his food. And I was like, wow, I can't believe they even have to pay for food, you know, they're superstars. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good thing. But yeah, I'm an American football fan too, so I watch a Super Bowl, and yeah, I like that too.
Now, you've been in Wimbledon, which is way top of my bucket list. So you get more than I have, so... Everything's cool.
I'm not sure about that, Patrick, but I have been at Wimbledon, I've been at French, and some of my coaches were also at the qualies for US Open and Australian Open. We have players there playing in the qualies. And I mean, it's a big experience. It's a big arena. It's definitely... definitely another league than being on a tennis court somewhere on court 13 in the middle of the wood teaching little kids. But it's also, it's great because, I mean, the kids are the future. They're the ones that, you know, grow up to be. In fact, one of the kids I taught, a little girl when she was 9 or 10, she grew up to be a German champion under 12, 14, under 16, and under 18. And so now she's a WTA player, professional, about 250 in the world. And so it all starts somewhere. And that's what you have to remember. I mean, all these little things, they start somewhere, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Watching talent is always, always great because you can let your imagination run wild where this kid may end up or may not end up. And when you get to see them a few years later, you can see what all your imagination did right and what didn't.
Yeah.
And to help those kids elevate their level of play and become something that is bigger than the thing they are doing right now is always great. So the third question is, obviously, you're a tennis person. Which is your second favorite sport to do?
Oh, that's a tough one because I like so many. Like I said, I mean, to play personally, American football, I used to play when I lived in America. But over in Germany, it's not so big. And also, I'm not so young anymore like I used to be. So therefore, it's a bit too physical. I like watching many sports, basketball. But for me, the second sport I would have to say would be paddle, because we've got that in the club where the academy is, Tegi Nord in Lohausen, Düsseldorf. And we had two new paddle courts built. And that is a fantastic sport. It's much easier to learn than tennis. And we've got a waiting list now for members. And I think it's now the third most popular sport in Spain. It came from Spain or Mexico. And we have people coming and playing that were not too successful in tennis, or it took them a long time to learn. And they have immediate success in paddle, and it's really fun. So for me to play personally, I would say paddle, my second sport.
Okay, we had a podcast about paddle like last year.
Okay.
They stated that it was one of the fastest growing sports in Europe as well. So
yeah.
I think there's a movement, we can see that.
There is. We're the first ones, I think the club Tegi Nord, where I am, is, I think, the first one in Düsseldorf to actually build the paddle courts. And you should come along. Anyone should come along. It's great. It's not just playing the paddle. It's also very social. And it's a great thing, really.
Yeah. Now that we got the three questions out of the way with you as well, let's talk tennis.
Okay.
You got a tennis school, academy kind of thing. What is your approach on talent development? Because it's a tad different than the one that usually run off the mill tennis schools.
It's very difficult because you can probably hear from my accent, I'm English. And
really?
But I mean, I worked several years in America too, so my English has gone a bit, my accent's down the drain. But one of the reasons why I actually left England is because I got frustrated. I was young. I was a new coach. I had my license, my first license, my second license to teach tennis. And I got frustrated because whenever I got a good player and they became successful in England, you know, playing the nationals. The nationals is like the Deutsche Meisterschaft. Then they used to get taken away by federations because then they would get the coaching, the training for free. And that's one of the reasons why I left. Also because I wanted to learn more. And that's why I went to the famous school, Nick Bollettieri in America, because he had the most professionals, Andre Agassi, Williams, Kournikova, lots of players. So I went there to learn, which I did, and I was there for 7 years, so I learned a hell of a lot of stuff. And then I decided, okay, I want to do my own thing. So that's why I came to Germany. And I also started pretty much from nothing here and 21 years ago, and taught some small kids, some middle kids, some big kids, and had probably about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 professionals. I mean, ATP players, which I developed from scratch. You know, they came to me with nothing, and they became professionals on ATP, WTA. And I thought, okay, cool. I can make this happen. And it did work for a time. But at some point then, same thing happened like in England. They got basically better offers from different federations. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this now. I'm probably going to get sued.
got I don't think so.
Better offers from different federations where they could train for free. They could go on tournaments for free. And I mean, we've got a sponsor, Yonex, yeah, and they give us a lot of stuff, equipment, tennis rackets, shoes, clothes, bags. They helped a lot of our players with also the same stuff. But at the end of the day, I can't compete as a relatively small academy, can't compete with the big names, with DTB, German Tennis Federation or whatever, and they've got the coaches and they can take the players and they get supported, they get the flights, they get the food, they got the accommodation, they get the coaches traveling with them, and it's tough. It's a really tough game.
So what does make your approach a bit different than the approach of those federations that until you lose those players to what does it that do you make a difference?
I think also one of the reasons why I started the academy 21 years ago is because I'd learned a lot from different coaches, different, I mean, Nick Bollettieri is basically one of the most famous in the world, and I was with him for many years, and I'd learned so much, but at the end of the day, I took with me from England, from Austria, from France, from the academy, from Nick, which I worked in Berlin. I was a director of the academy in Berlin. I'd learned so much, and I thought, okay, I like some of the stuff that's being taught, but some of the stuff I don't agree with. And that's why then I started my own academy. I just wanted to do my thing, which I thought was good for the players, for developing professionals. And I didn't like having rules, people telling me you have to do this exercise, or this is good, or this is not good. I wanted to do it my own way. And that's basically why I started the academy all those years ago.
So it's basically you're the anti-authoritarian guy in the tennis academy circus, so to speak.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, I've done it like I'm a full-time coach for 30 years. I've got the academy since 21 years. We're in a 22nd year now. And the thing is that, like I said, I agree with certain things, certain exercises, certain techniques, and some things I don't agree with. And that's why I, you know, want to do things my way. And it has actually been quite successful over the years. What's basically missing is a sponsor to come in and say, hey, you know what, Chris? Here's that money, put it in a few kids, potential champions, put it in, see what you can do. And I would love that. I would really love that. But it's especially at the moment, it's not possible.
Yeah, during the pandemic, everybody has this money problem somehow because those companies don't have the money anymore. About getting that money and what you basically liked and don't like, we're going to talk about that after a short commercial break.
Hier kommt die Reality Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium Trash TV.
Eine neue Folge Kampf der Reality Stars. Heute 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Im Frühling steigt so einiges: die Temperaturen, die Stimmung und die Partys draußen. Nur die Preise. Die sinken jetzt bei vielen Produkten langfristig. Entdecke die neuen niedrigen Preise. Sogar bei vielen Möbeln für draußen. In deinem IKEA und auf IKEA.de.
Hello, we are back with Chris Spencer talking about tennis. You said that you learned a lot from Nick Bollettieri and how he does approach the game of tennis, and that you for yourself and your academy did think that a few things you don't like and a few things you do like, and that you continue to teach things that you like, and you basically scratch those things you didn't like.
Yeah.
What are the things you didn't like? Because obviously there are some things you have to do, and that's the things you probably like.
Well, yeah.
To play tennis.
So Nick would probably kill me now if he heard me saying this. But the situation is we basically had, like, I don't know, 30, 35 tennis coaches.
Okay.
And hundreds of kids. And they just took the kids and kids and kids. And it's like, we'll figure it out. And it became sometimes too many kids, and they couldn't get the quality training that they basically paid for. And it was sometimes difficult. We had to wing it. It's called winging it. You had to sometimes, like, everybody know. I mean, a normal coach knows that to do, for example, Ausdauer endurance training before you train tennis is not so good. You need to do speed work before you start doing tennis, and the endurance comes at the end of the day afterwards. That's when
because this messes up your timing and your whole coordination.
Yeah, you're tired, and so you can do like endurance at the end of the day. At the start of the day, you need to do like sprints and stuff like that. And with the amount of kids and players we had, it wasn't always possible. That was one thing, and many things that they just kind of like bothered me. It was like You had kids coming in, and they were basically with some, I don't know if I should say this, with some coaches that had been there a week.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know the system. The coaches didn't know the system, didn't know what to do, didn't know the rules. But they were on call, and the kids basically came. I mean, they had a good time, and you know, if that's what they want, it's great. But in America, basically, everything is bigger and better. And here in Europe, you can't do it like that. And the stuff that I took, the positive stuff I took with me was the high energy training. It's like, if you're on court, if I'm teaching you, Patrick, on court, and I would say to you, yeah, my shot, good follow through. Or if I would say to you, come on, move your feet. Hey, that's great. Well done. Come on, go. Then you get immediately kind of lifted up. And this is a thing that 21 years ago I brought to Germany a little bit, this like high intensity training. And I had a lot of kids that they loved it because it motivated them. And imagine driving in your car and you're listening to slow music, then you start to feel sleepy. This isn't some techno, it's not my thing, but high energy music, then you start to get pumped up. And this is what some of it was about.
And that is what, like, sports like basketball or baseball do up to today, that they hear, listen to music my practice and to lift them up, to get them like over the edge, over the point where they think, usually without music or without something to lift them up, they get to the point where they don't want to go any further. And with that lifting up spirit in music, you go a bit further.
We still do have a lot of times on court, we have like a ghetto blaster, a music machine, and we put on music when the kids are training because it's like high energy music and it motivates them. They move faster, they think faster. It's motivation. And at the start, I had some problems with this with some people saying, oh, they can't concentrate, the kids, it's not good for them. But then you watch some videos of like pros training, and they've got their Kopfhörer, their earphones in, and they're training with music because it does help. And there's also another thing that we still do. We still train sometimes, not all the time, with music. You have to know what you're doing. You can't train tactics when you've got music on. You have to be quiet.
That's probably not the right way, yeah.
But when you're training like high intensity, like footwork, Schnelligkeit, fast feet and stuff, then the music helps. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah, that's basically the reason why in sports like baseball and even in cricket, they get walk-up music when they go at bat to pump themselves up, to make the at bat before that, forget them and pump themselves up, that this kid can still do that, the thing that they messed up before.
Yeah.
So having music and practices and during workout is generally a good thing if that isn't a thing where you have to really talk a lot like tactics and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But in general, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So what are the programs your tennis academy offers to the kids and families that want to become better or want to start out with tennis?
There's actually no limit. It's pretty much everything from little tiny kids to adults, beginners to professionals. We accommodate everything. We can take everything. There was actually a lady called, I can't say the name, yesterday or the day before yesterday, she had a kid 1.5 years of age.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, listen, some of the kids start with three or four, but I think personally 1.5 is a little bit too young.
Yes.
1.5. I mean, you can't even walk straight. But I said, listen, if you want to bring, then you can bring, but I'm not going to make a group for the kid. They can come for a private lesson if they want, but my opinion is, wait another couple of years, 1.5 years, and then we can talk about it then. But we basically are there for everybody, where, we have, like I said, like professionals down to beginners and house ladies, rentner, pensioners. We're for everybody. And for me personally, I mean, all my coaches, they're so great. They're all international coaches, which means they speak German and other languages. It's a great thing because I personally have fun teaching professionals or wannabe professionals, but they're also kids that I teach. And there's a kid I used to teach a couple of years ago. He really had no talent.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew that. And I told him that. And I said, you know what? I respect you. I admire you so much because you're sticking with it. You're sticking with it. And you're doing the best you can, and I will help you all I can. And actually, he's not a bad player now. He's actually quite good. He's on one of the teams in the club.
Okay, so you can make a decent tennis player of me and my forehand whip.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but
Just say no.
I have to see you play first. Let me see you hit for 2 minutes. That's going to be enough. I will see and see what I can do with you.
Okay. So tennis in general is like, it comes in waves. Sometimes it's high up there with the other sports and it's way down there. And then it's basically up and down. But the thing in general that I observe in the tennis circuit is that a lot of talent is there, but it basically stays talent. And the legends like Roger and Nadal and whoever, they still dominate it, and they will probably do that for the next 10 years to come. So what do you think is going wrong and right in that tennis circuit?
That's a tough one.
I know. That's why I ask it.
Okay. This just my opinion now.
Yeah.
I think, okay, before Corona, yeah, I talk about before Corona because now is a difficult time. My opinion is basically in tennis, the top people, Roger, Rafa, Djokovic, Tsitsipas, Kyrgios, they make good money, really good money. The people below make not good money. I would say shit, but probably not allowed to. They make not good money. I mean, I'm talking about people, let's say, outside the top 100.
Okay.
You know, you could be 120 in the world and you're not making very good. One of my players was about 180 in the world and he was scratching to make a living. I remember going with him to the qualies at Wimbledon, and we stayed basically in this tent because we couldn't afford a hotel. And obviously the top ones, top 10, top 20, top 50 maybe, they're doing good. Of course they're doing good. If you compare it to football, okay, mm-hmm. We go back to American football, European football, basketball. If you're even in Germany playing football in the Bundesliga and you are the 200th best player in Germany, you're making great money. Great money. You have a nice life. You have a nice car, nice house, all this kind of stuff. And in tennis, if you're 200, not in Germany, 200 in the world, you're struggling. You're still struggling. And I think personally, it should be changed that, I mean, if you're 500 in the world at something, you should get
paid
for that. You should get rewarded for that. You should get paid.
Yeah.
And that's a thing that I find in tennis pretty tough. I mean, I've told so many people, parents, like I've got talented kids. I'm like, listen, tennis is not the right sport to make money because, you know, you're talking over the whole world, 50 people making good money. And if you're 50 in the world in football, you're great.
You're awesome.
You got a Bentley, a Rolls Royce, you got a villa with a swimming pool, you got all this stuff. But in tennis, it's tough, and that's why I think personally, again, just my opinion, if the rules could or should be changed, then give more money to the lower down people because, you know, 500, 800, 1,500 in the world, they're good and they're working their butts off to get that far. Like I said, my player with 180, no reward. I mean, he's got nothing from it today. He's working now, unfortunately. He's also going to kill me when I say this, but I don't care. I didn't say his name. He's working as a coach and just part-time probably. But, I mean, you have to imagine all the hours he put in, all the potential, all this stuff. And he was training with Dustin Brown and different people, and he went to London and made sparring with Roger Federer. It's just for me, unfair. I mean, I've got my academy. We're still going. Everything's cool at the moment. But I just feel sorry for certain people that they made it, kind of half made it. If it'd be in football, basketball, baseball, they would have really made it. Yeah.
And that's sad to hear. And that's this thing that we do observe as well, that if you made it to the top 10, let's say top 10, and you stay there long enough, you don't have to worry about a thing. You even don't have to worry about winning more, because it's easier because you get everything paid, or you don't have to work or put the hours into get into a decent hotel. And maybe that's even the reason, like, I think Andre Agassi's dad told Andre back then that he should start being a baseball professional instead of a tennis professional, because you earn better money. And I think that is still the case in tennis. It's been nice talking to you about tennis and your academy and what you do to teach kids to become good tennis players. Check out the link in the show notes to Spencer's Tennis Academy. Get your kids to play tennis. It's a good sport for everything, and to even help them become better soccer or basketball players even. It's been nice talking to you, and we see you once this corona thing blows over again.
Definitely. Bye. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I look forward to having a nice lunch with you in a beer garden somewhere.
Okay, I'll take you on that. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hier kommt die Reality Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium Trash TV.
Eine neue Folge Kampf der Reality Stars. Heute 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Im Frühling steigt so einiges. Die Temperaturen, die Stimmung und die Partys draußen. Nur die Preise. Die sinken jetzt bei vielen Produkten langfristig. Entdecke die neuen niedrigen Preise. Sogar bei vielen Möbeln für draußen. In deinem IKEA und auf IKEA.de.
Der Big & Sports Podcast. Wissenswertes aus der Welt des Sports. Mit Patrick Hoch und Laura Luft. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Im Frühling steigt so einiges. Die Temperaturen, die Stimmung und die Partys draußen. Nur die Preise. Die sinken jetzt bei vielen Produkten langfristig. Entdecke die neuen niedrigen Preise. Sogar bei vielen Möbeln für draußen. In deinem IKEA und auf IKEA.de.
Hier kommt die Reality-Elite.
Ich suche nicht die Sendezeit sucht mich.
Beste Umgangsformen.
Du kannst dich im Pool pickeln.
Ich meine, wie crazy ist das?
Und Unterhaltung vom Feinsten.
Wir sind hier im Premium-Trash-TV.
Eine neue Folge Kampf der Reality-Stars. Heute 20.15 Uhr bei RTL 2.
Von 0 auf 100. Aral feiert 100 Jahre mit über 100.000 Gewinnen. Zum Beispiel ein Jahr frei tanken. Jetzt ein Dankeschön rubbellos zu jedem Einkauf. Alle Infos auf aral.de. Aral. Alles super.